We're hoping on that Mem Hei Amud Aleph, Seilach and Purim to everybody. And we got to approximately the middle of the daf. We're up to four lines down in the big lines.
Niftacha kedelet.
Question over here is, what is the halacha if there is a cut that is shaped like three sides of a square? So it's a door. So on the one hand, it's not considered to be a chisaron because it's still connected in the flat. What is the size of such a chisaron? Normally the size of a chisaron is the size of an iser in the konah. In this case, we take into consideration the flap by saying that the iser would have to be able to go in and out the doorway facing it head on, so that the flap itself actually seals up part of the door and therefore would have to be really larger than the size of the iser, and that makes up for the connection of the flap. Omar Rav.
How much does a flap take?
Whatever it is. That extra, whatever it is. And whatever shape it is also, even if it's shaped like a square. Omar Rav. A few of the nishtayrava, ela chuya achat lamala, v'chuya achat lamata, kshera. If it's nistik, the kana is slit longitudinally, so along its length, instead of, till now we've been talking about slits in which it's nipsika, which is along the width of the kana. So along the length of the kana, then even if you just have one chulia above and one chulia below, now a chulia could mean over here, as Rashi suggests, three rings, because that's what a chulia means, it sits is. Spine. We're talking about the kana over here, the trachea. These rings. So either three or one, to which Rabbi Yochanan replied, they said over this bimer in front of Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rab, and he said, what kind of chuya? Who? What? Ma chuya, the Kamarano would stand. Lema, feel the nishtaira, bala, mashalamalamashalamatakshah. The idea over here is, as long as the pressure is on, top and bottom, the pressure pulls it shut. If you have an incision that goes along the length. So if you have an incision that cuts through it, then the more pressure, the more it opens. Mashenkin, if you have the pressure on the top and bottom on an incision along the length of the cone, it'll keep it shut, and therefore it works perfectly well. They quoted Rabbi Yonatan to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yonatan was a Talmud Chacham in Bavel, and that he had said the same thing, that as long as there's a mashal mala, mashal mata, and he said, gee, I didn't know there were intelligent people in Bavel. How do you like that? Yadin chavrin bavloya the Purusha Gai Taima. There's people over there that could think a little bit. Interesting. Tana Rabbi Chia bar Yosef, Kamehir Rabbi Yochanan. Kol hatzavar kulo kasher l'shvita, mitabat hagdola at kanfei re'ah hatachtona. The entire kana is kosher for shvita, from the tabat hagdola. Now, of course, this is not true lahalakha, because lahalakha, you can actually go above the tabat hagdola. This was the shita of the Mishnah in the Midrabanan in the Shir of Hagroma. But the part of it that's a chiddush to us is that you can cut the kana all the way down to what sounds like the lowest lobes of the lungs. It's a little bit strange. And what that seems to be saying is that since if you pull up the kana will extend, the lower part of the kana can extend and be pulled up above the lungs. So even when it's not pulled up, if you shaft it basically in a way in which it hits the kana, even though it's surrounded by the upper lobes of the lung, it would be kosher. Comes along Rava to explain, no, that's not what it means. When it says the lowest, it's talking about the highest. We're talking about an animal that's hanging in a butcher shop. So when we call it the tachtona, we mean the elyona. So the lowest part, and it's important to note it that way, because if you were pulling, if you had the animal hanging by its neck, then in fact the kana would be pulled upwards, outside of the normal places in the lungs. Let's take a look at the picture over here, so that you can see it exactly. And therefore, the time it says the doctor place where the lungs are hanging down so that gravity pulls them over the cornea, so that you can see that the place that's kosher for Shita is in fact high up on the neck and not low down. Here, if you take a look at the picture of page 44, if we draw a line on the windpipe without any pressure on the neck, and we take that, put on a white thing on that line, then we pull it out as if the animal is stretching its neck, somebody's pulling on it, then that part where the white line is pulled out way above where it was before, and then you'd think that you'd be allowed to cut the cornea down on the bottom where really that part would be at the lower lobes of the lung. So what I want to say, says Rob, is that what we're really talking about is the animal hanging from its leg in a butcher shop, the lungs now facing down, falling down over the cornea, and therefore when I say the lower lobes, I mean the highest part, basically, in the neck. That's what I'm coming to say. Because what I want to say, to make it very clear, is Shani Omer, kosher poshetet savaravah ro'ah, b'vat shelo tehanes. You can only cut that part which normally, if the animal is feeding, that part of the cone extends above the lungs, but not in such a way that the shofet is putting on pressure to pull the head up, and that pulls the cone out the bottom, so when he checks at the bottom part of the neck, he's actually cutting parts of the cone that normally would be surrounded by the various lobes of the lungs. Boy, Rav Chanina became Rav Chananya. What you say is that artificial pressure can't be put on the neck. How about an animal that is actually forcing its own neck out? And sometimes it'll see something interesting to eat, and will force its neck more than is usual for eating.
Is it doing it making a sound? Stretching
the neck? Yeah. So it stretches its neck to get something, let's say, down in a hole. And it pulls the cord, and you check it there. Is that called a roa, or is that called a teanes? Because over here it's ones atatzma. Take. Yosef Rabbi Yochanan Resh Lakish. And Rabbi Yochanan was sitting with Resh Lakish and Ofek Milsa Mibenayim. And as part of the discussion, it became clear that they agree that onas besimonim v'shafat psula. That if you pull the simonim more than they normally would extend, and shecht it in that place, it's possible, because you're shechting what would have a din of lung. Not, in other words, it would be bronchial tubes, not trachea, even though there's no clear demarcation, obviously. But that part that is normally contained within the lobes is not considered to be cornea. Nikev ha-cornea. Furthermore, what they said was that if there's a hole in the cornea beneath the chazer, then it's called a rea, not a cornea. If it's called a rea, then of course it becomes possible with any hole. Whereas if it were called a kone, it would only be if it was nipsika beruba. So it becomes much more chomor, even though it looks the same, has the same construction as a bronchial tube, and it has as a trachea. But at that point, it's part of the lung. Kone rabbonu. Hezeu chazeh. When we say the chazeh, by the way, now this braisa was not said legabe dinim of trefes and shkita. This price was said legabi of the chiyuv to give the chaz of a shok to kohanim. So defining the chazeh over there, it says what is called the chazeh, zeha roe et hakarka. What it's referring to is the part of the animal that, as it walks, faces downwards towards the ground. Lemata, and again we say lemata, we mean an animal hanging in a butcher shop. Lemata ad hatzavar, going down until the neck. Lemala ad hakeres, going up until the rumen. Chotech shtei tzlaot b'shtei tfanot elech ve'elech, cutting off the first ribs. Now, according to Rashi, it means the first rib on either side, which is two ribs, tzlaot. According to Tosfos, it's talking about two ribs on either side, which is Rabbi Nachmanu's shita. That's the springs of Rabbi Nachmanu. And that area is called the chaza that is given to the kohanim. And zeu chazani tana kohanim, and we're using the same idea over here that lamata menachazeh. Once it gets beyond that point being the equivalent part of where it's already entering between the lobes of the lung, it's considered to be lung and not considered to be cunning. So nikav krum shon moach. Now, again, as we explained, the Kum Shel Moach is a rather vague kind of thing, because there is a Kum Shel Moach, which is really part of the skull, and it's the underlying membrane of the skull itself, which is called the dura mater. And that is what you could call the Kum Shel Moach, but there's also an extremely thin membrane that actually, the cranial membrane itself, that isn't really, you can't really take it off without taking off some brain along with it and separate out the pia mater. So there, the question over here is what is meant. Both Rav and Shmuel said that what's meant over here is the upper krum, which is really under the skull, and that would be considered to be, if it has a hole in it, a trefa, even though avagav de loin kev tata. Whereas others quoted it as saying amila ad in kev tata, only if the bottom membrane, which is very thin, was also cut. Only the membrane.
Not the
brain itself.
Not the skull.
No, the skull is a different, that's something else. We have Rova, but we had Miguel Golish and Ephraim Zabarul, that's a different, that's even without the membrane. There's two separate, completely separate, that's a Shvura. Mm-hmm. This is a Nekuva. Completely different trafus, not to be confused with each other. This could have become, this could have happened through disease. It could have happened through a small puncture through the skull. I know that you're having a hard time to understand what I mean by the tatar, but if you consider the brain to be held in a sack of plastic, it would be the plastic sack. Now, you can't really see it in a brain, but therefore, says Rabba Barachanam Rav Yosha ben Levi, kinegdo bebeitzin nikar. You can clearly see this in the testicle, which you have here, the same idea, the scrotum becomes the skull. There's a membrane that is directly around the scrotum, which surrounds the testicle, and then you have a very thin membrane around the testicle itself, here in page 46. Okay, so you have the same idea. Pretend the scrotum, this is a deer testicle. Pretend the scrotum is the skull, and you have the thick membrane underneath it, and then you have the actual thin membrane above the testicle, which can be peeled, which can't be peeled on the brain, really. Although they do peel it here on the brain, but they took off some brain with it, as you can see on page 45. You take a look, the right hemisphere here still has the upper membrane on it. The left hemisphere does not. And you can see that it's missing blood vessels and so on. We're peeled off with it together with some brain matter, which is over here on the left-hand side. So that's why we're using the testicle as a simon, because you can't really get the same detail on a brain directly. Om Reb Shimon ben Pazi, Om Reb Yeshua ben Levi, Mishum Bar Kapora. What is the definition of brain? Because the truth is, it's hard to say precisely where the brain ends and the spinal cord begins. And since it's basically the same neural matter, and there's a tremendous difference, because the brain, we said, is, even if you've got a neck, the spinal cord is dafka, similar to the conic, as the nissa. We need rubo. So it's very important to define what's what. So what is the moach? Bar Kapara is quoted here as saying, the moach means kol mash bikidera, everything in the pot, meaning the skull, would be called the moach. Hitchil limshoch, once it narrows, nidon kechut hashidra. The question is, mehechan matchil limashech, at what point do we call it now flowing into the chut hashidra? Om Reb Yitzchak Bar Nachmani, the didim mifarshli min meid Reb Yeshua ben Levi, ki min shnei pulim yish, munachin al pi hakdera. There are two bean-like things that you find at the base of the skull. Those pulim are the place. Now, most shitas, almost everybody learns, and this is how Rashi explains it, that what we're talking about are the bones that hook the head into the vertebrae. So these are like little hooks come out of the head. They plug into the top vertebrae, which allows the head to move up and down. there isn't that much turning back and forth because the vertebrae have to turn with it, which is why if you take a look at a bird only has one of these, which gives it a lot more movement of the head. It's a twisted head all the way around. Over here, you can't twist that all the way around because you got two. So these two polling now.
Are you sure they're hooks? Because in humans, they're not. They're just sort of a flat surface that is where the lower bones, this is the articulation point.
Okay, whatever. I mean, the shape is like a hook. Where they fit in. Okay, but in any event, where they go up and down against the vertebrae. Yeah. So those polyn represent the place that, as a simen, of course, has nothing to do with the brain, and it's part of the skeleton. But from that point on, mina polyn vilifnim, from the top of these beans, then it's brain. Mina polyn vilachutz, the bottom, towards the back of the animal. So that's called lachutz. Polyn atzman, the area of the bean itself, I'm not sure. It seems to me reasonable. So again, this is most shitas hold that this is what's being referred to here. It's nothing to do with the brain at all. Now there are some rishonim hold that it does have to do with the brain. Now we're not using the skull as a simon for the brain. In other words, it's referring to is certain structures in the brain. There's a lot of discussion which particular structures might be meant that resemble polling.
Not what we're calling
polling. In other words, according to him, polling would be something else. It's a rabbi yeshita. Look, there's various yeshitas. It's not very clear because the problem is in a mammal's brain, you can't see it until you cut off the top part of the brain. So then in the lower brain, you can see there are such things in. There's nodes for processing vision that stick out on the side and so on, so that may be what's meant, and that could explain perhaps the next mimer, where it says Rabbi Yirmiyah bodak ba'ufa, that Rabbi Yirmiyah checked a bird, ve'eshkach tamin shnei pulin amunach napi kedera. This is very strange because if it's referring to the pulin, a bird doesn't have two pulin. It's referring to the pulin we were talking about. How did he find two pulin in a bird? And this is really the problem, which is addressed on two levels, if you hold to the Rav Yeshita. One is that we're not talking about the skeleton, we're talking about things in a brain. And the other beautiful point is that in a bird you can see it, in a mammal you can't see it. So as you're saying, in a mammal you'd have to dissect the brain in order to be able to get to the two pooling. Mashenkein, in a bird, I think I saw a picture.
45, page 49
on the bottom. Page 49.
Where we just
were. Page 49. No. That's the Rashi sheet, or almost all the other sheets. Does he refer to another picture? I could have sworn I saw another picture. He doesn't refer to any other picture?
Page 47.
Page 47. No. Maybe it's a further. Oh, here it is. Yeah, page 51. Here you go. Page 50 and 51. So what he's talking about are the optic lobes in the bird, which you can see very clearly, one on either side. So these are bean. They really are bean shaped. And you can have something similar in a mammal if you peel off the top part of the brain. You know, so it's in the midbrain. So there you could see, in other words, from the midbrain down, right, even though you have over here the smaller part of the brain, the cerebellum, underneath, but this would still be considered to be, according to this, that part of the brain is part of the spinal cord and not an actual brain. Okay, that's his sheet. But at least it would explain why it is that we look for a bird, and it would explain why you have two pulling in a bird. If you don't learn the shita, then you'll have to say that the bird that he looked at was dafka chicken. Because it happens to be in a chicken, it looks like there are two pulling, even though there aren't, because it's grooved. A chicken, it happens to be grooved. If you checked any other bird, you wouldn't have found kamin shnei pulling. So maybe that's the chiddush according to Rashi. The chiddush is that you could find such a simon even in a bird. Okay, in any event, that's the point. Dikev halev lebeit chalalo. Now, before we get on to the lathe issue, we got some really serious problems in identifying what is going on in the Gemara. And that's because, remember that the Gemara uses the term kone for any tube. Now, it doesn't matter whether it's a tube that carries air, it's a tube that carries oxygenated blood, which we would call an artery, or whether it's a tube that carries deoxygenated blood, which we would call a vein. Whatever it is, it's a tube. So we sort of mix it all together. Now, so that leads us to a lot of difficulties in identification in the city that's coming up. Let's just note, first of all, what goes on, so when we refer to the elements later on, we'll understand what's happening. Basically, the cow shares a four-chambered heart with a human. And what you really have is a very, very well-articulated and exceedingly complex mechanism, which looks simple when you look at it, that has to be perfectly in sync in order to make sure that you don't mess up. What happens is a four-chambered heart is essentially two separate hearts. And what's happening is that you have two separate sets of circulation. And the beauty of this is that it avoids the problems that you get in things like lizards and in simpler organisms, where there's no way to separate between the oxygenated blood and the blood that's already been used by cells, which is partially deoxygenated. So to make it more efficient, the mammals have a beautiful system in which the vein, the main vein, the vena cava, which looks like it's coming from the liver, and that's important to notice. It goes through the liver, it actually has liver around it. And therefore, the Gemara views it as going to the liver. Now that carries the deoxygenated blood from the body. There's two, one coming from the top, one coming from the bottom. And that plugs into the heart in such a way that it is sent directly to the lungs with the pulmonary artery. So it goes through a separate circulation system, and then it circulates back around to the other atrium of the heart. And from there, only freshly oxygenated blood goes out through the aorta and goes out to the body. Circling back is important to note that even though it comes out underneath the lungs where the heart is, but it goes up and around the back of the lungs and is completely surrounded by fat tissue along the back of the lung, the aorta. So it looks like it's part of the lungs almost. And at the top, where the cone is coming down, the actual trachea is coming down, the trachea could be seen on a gross level as splitting into the aorta and into the bronchia because of the fat. Even though, obviously, there's no real connection between them. So it's important to take that into consideration. And what you have is that after that blood is then used, so then it comes back in, goes to the other side, and then is shot out again to the lungs, come back to the oxygen. Well, there's never a mixture. In a healthy heart, there's never a mixture between those two sides. So that you have two completely different sets of circulation. Now, there's a machlokas. If you take a look at the heart itself, you only look at the kones that are coming out of the heart, what you will see is essentially three large vessels. One will be the pulmonary artery, which is going out only to the lungs. And then you'll have the aorta, which is the main blood flow, which folds back over the lungs, goes all the way back down. And then you'll have coming into the heart, which is really a vein, but it's a nice big vessel, not as large as the aorta, obviously. But you have also the blood that has now come together from all the little veins all over the place. Looks like it's coming from the liver and going up into...
Is that the vena cava?
Yes, that's the vena cava. They have a nice picture in page 54. In page 54, you can see the pulmonary artery on the one hand. You can have the vena cava on the other. And then you have the cone, not to be confused, happens to go by it. There's nowhere near it. And then you have the aorta. You have three tubes that come out of the heart. And they pass right by the cone so that you could get it confused. Okay? But there's no real mixture between them. Now, one confusing issue in the Gemara is that the Gemara here is trying to give us, possibly, trying to give us background to a sugya later on, that talks about tracing the path of a needle or a date pit that could somehow have been inhaled and make its way into the liver. And that's why we're interested in finding, actually, a mode by which, if something would come in from the kona into the lungs, it could work its way into the vena cava, and from there into the liver. So what we want to see is that, in a sense, there is a way in which you have, it's a little bit insane because the blood flow is in the wrong direction, but just in order to see that you do have a connection between the two, theoretically, if this thing is sharp and it punctures, it could force its way into the heart and out of the heart again, all going in the wrong direction, against the pressure of the blood and so on, and make its way into the liver. Okay?
It punctures the lungs, isn't it, right?
This is pregnant concussions. Well, see, it's great, but how does it happen? That's the shayla. We're trying to figure out how such a thing could happen. So it could be, Rashi's pshat that insists that we're talking about the kana, meaning literally the trachea. We're not talking about the three tubes that are coming out of the heart, even though we're analyzing the heart. Could be that he has in mind, as some achronim learned, that he has in mind basically to see you later on, and he's trying to show where these things interconnect. They do interconnect. In the lungs, they actually do interconnect. To say that that's a very practical interconnection is stretching it a bit. So now, the first thing is that if you look at a heart, so grossly speaking, you may not even notice that there are four chambers. Because if you cut through a heart, very much it depends where you cut, but if you cut through the heart, what you might notice is only the left ventricle, which is very large, because that's basically where you're getting all the pressure. And there's around it, what will look to you is like smaller chambers that are around it. You won't pay much attention to them. In actuality, obviously, there's also a right ventricle, and they have the right atrium, and they have the left atrium. Right. So the Gemara, there's different ways of understanding this question. It doesn't really matter, because Lamaisa, any chamber that's punctured is a traver. But the Gemara, before it knows that, asks, when you say that it has to go all the way through the muscle into a chamber, do you mean lebeit chalal katan or lebeit chalal gadol? So there's a machlokas. Is the reference to either ventricle as gadol and either atrium as katan? Or is the reference to dafka, the left ventricle, as being gadol and everything else would be katan? Again, it's a completely theoretical question because it really doesn't matter one way or the other. I don't understand what the problem is. I mean, we saw before that Rabbi Shimon says, when we talked about the sampun area, so Rabbi Shimon, who says that the lung has to be punctured all the way into the bronchi, he said the beta sampunot, and we didn't know quite what that meant. And Rava Bar Takhlifa quoted Rabbi Yirmiyah Bar Ava, was quoting Rava, saying that means not any old bronchial tube, but rather it has to be dafka, the sampuna gadol, which is the direct extension, the large bronchi, direct extension of the kana. So if that's the case, it should mean the same thing over here, dafka, it should mean the large ventricle. Says the Gemara, what are you talking about? It doesn't say over there to a sampun, it says lebeta sampunot. A beta sampunot, I understand, has a different connotation. Okay, Asher, what's the comparison? Hatam the beta sampunot katani. Beta sampunot implies la'echa the shafti sampunot kulu. It's the place where all the other bronchi connect to. So then, of course, that's what it means. Only the large one. But over here, it doesn't say. It says the beta halalo to a chamber. It doesn't say the batea halalim or anything. I mean, malik halal gadol, malik halal katan. A chamber is the important thing. And that's how we pass it. In which case, again, it's no longer important to determine what we're talking about, whether it's the right ventricle or whether it's an atrium. Now, kinei halev, again, the assumption over here is that the kinei halev is the aorta. So that would be the largest, basically, the largest blood vessel that's coming out of the lung, out of the heart. The Rambam seems to learn, there's all kinds of different ways of understanding it, that it's referring to the pulmonary artery. And there's a lot of problems with that, as we will see. So the kana halev Rav says it's b'mashu. The din of that is that if it has any hole in it, then it's a disaster. And it's treifa. Shmuel amar beruba. Shmuel says no, it has to be cut through road in order to be treifa. Now, what do we mean by the kana halev? Says Rav bar Yitzchak amar Rav. What that means is the chalev shagabe difanot. It's the fat along, now a dauphin is usually the inside of the animal's abdomen, which is absurd. There isn't anything like that on the difanot that could possibly have any significance. It's fat. Difanot shagadaitach, what are you talking about? No, difanot of the rea, I mean. In other words, the back of the rea, going along the edge of the rea. Going along the edge of the rea, along the back, in the middle of the rea, is fat. And that completely covers, and that's why it seems very clearly to be the aorta. Because there isn't any, the pulmonary artery doesn't follow along the lungs all the way down the back. And it isn't even covered with fat. And therefore, everybody assumes that what's meant over here is the main artery, the aorta. Omer ha-meimar mishmei d'Rav Nachman, and this basically seems to be the way the Rambam learns that ha-meimar is arguing on the previous sugya. The other Rishonim learned that a meimar is articulating the previous sugya. So in Ochinami, the previous sugya is clearly referring to the aorta. But comes along now a meimar mishmei d'Rav Nachman, tlata kanehad. There are three different tubes that we're talking about over here. Chat porish l'oliva. Now one goes into the heart. Chat porish l'rea. One goes into the lungs. The chat porish l'kavda. One goes into the liver. Now again, the naive way of learning this, if we could ignore Rashi's chat, would be that it's referring specifically to three tubes coming out of the heart. Because after all, that's what we're discussing. And when it says one goes to the heart, it means that we look at the aorta as going into the heart, so to speak, for the rest of the body. We're not interested in the directional blood flow, obviously, because it goes out of the heart, not into the heart. One, it goes to the lungs, which is true. That's the pulmonary artery. It goes directly into the lungs in order to oxygenate the used-up air. The chat porish l'kavda, which is true, except it's, again, the wrong direction. The vein, the vena cava, is coming from what looks like the kaved, even though it isn't really part of the kaved at all, but you could see very clearly how it looks like kaved somewhere or other. Bottom of where? I know there's better pictures than that. Much better pictures than that. Yeah, no, that's not a good picture. So there's got to be a better picture here. Here we go. Beautiful picture on page 58. You can see that the vena cava literally is surrounded by liver tissue. Take a look at this.
The bottom?
No, the top, which would fool anybody into thinking that it's really, it goes to the liver. And actually, it's passing through the liver. Right? And what it's really doing is carrying deoxygenated blood towards the heart from the lower part of the body. And you could see why it was so difficult to figure out what was really going on there. As a matter of fact, you know, it's very interesting that ad hayom, there's not really a very good, clear understanding of the circulatory system. There are computer modelings of precisely what goes where using all types of simulation technology about liquid flow, laminar flow, and so on. But it's extremely, extremely complex to figure out, you know, where everything is getting its oxygen from. So, you know, it's not... You can find... I mean, they keep posting new things, new, you know... Not new discoveries, but new models so that you can sort of reconstruct, you know, like what would happen in fine detail. Obviously, the gross detail is ancient already, you know. But the fine detail of what organ is getting from where, at what point, and how you maintain sufficient oxygen, even by the time you've got down to extremities and so on, is rather difficult But they're running now. They're still running. I mean, I see constantly they have like these updates on this. They run, you know, these over many computers simulations. Try to.
It's amazing to think that it's still so complex.
I know, isn't it? It's still so complex.
I think that in school it's so hushed.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You go all the way back to David. So anyway, you've got three of these things. Now, Rashi, as I mentioned to you before, he's got this completely different understanding. Now, when he's referring to Palazzo Kanahavi, it refers to the Kana. It's not talking about the lathe. That the Kana splits into three. One continues on as the trachea into the lungs. One continues on into the heart. Because, after all, they all pass together. So, again, on a gross level, it looks like there's an actual connection between them. And you go from the Kana, even though obviously one's an air tube, one is a, and one here you could take a look at again in 3.34 and 54. So that the Kana itself, the trachea is going right by, and when this is all under fat, and you see things coming out in all directions, it looks like the trachea is split up. You can't. You can't. But whatever. So again, I don't know of anybody that's ever given a good explanation of what, you know, what, why Rashi says porridge in this sense. But it doesn't necessarily have to mean that it's. He uses the word split. It's halach betocha. Okay, the din of these three would be that the rea kareya, so the one that goes into the rea, again, if it's referring to the kana, we already saw it has a din of rea at that point, and is even b'mashu is considered to be a whole. The kavda kekavda, now the vina kava has the same din as the kabe. In other words, either if it's missing completely, fine. If it just has a hole in it, it's not a trefa. The leva, as far as the one to the heart is concerned, again, we can assume here it's the aorta, so plige mar barchia. Sorry, the leva plige, sorry. And then when it comes to the lave, that's where we have a machlokas. For mar barchia, it's just the opposite. The rea is kikavda. Kikavda is kareya. And the leva is plige. The place where we have the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel is whether the dafka the aorta, but the others are in the opposite direction. So Rav holds the aorta is b'mashu, and Shmuel holds the aorta is berubo. And the shaila is whether we invert the kana and the kav.
On the
According to Rav, according to Shmuel, it's
I'm just saying according to real life. Somebody gets an
answer. Yeah, obviously.
He says.
And therefore, of course, it's reasonable, as we'll see. Also, Rav Chiya bar Yosef, Rav Shmaitz, the Rav committed Shmuel. So they said over the mimer of Rav to Shmuel, and I remember that Rav and Shmuel were sort of vying Rosh Yeshivas. In other words, Rav over here was the Rosh Yeshiva in Surah. And Rashmul is in the Narada, and those were for very many years competing institutions. And when Shmuel heard that, he said, "Yochi Amar Abba." Well, if that's what Abba said, lo yoda betrefus lo klum. We don't know nothing about trefus. And this was the Tosfos is right before that Abba wasn't a bakovedik way of referring to Rav, but rather non bakovedik way. Although Rashi insists over here that it's still Bakovet in the sense that even though I admit that he is a greater man than I am, they call him Abba, but he sure doesn't seem to know anything about Trefus. Nishbar Hashidra. So now moving on to the next case in the Mishnah, which is if the spine is broken. We already pointed out the spine is broken does not refer to the vertebrae. It refers to the actual Chut Hashidra. And what's strange about this whole discussion is that in the Gemara, the Chut HaShidra is spoken about in terms of its sheath rather than in terms of its actual content. which is very strange because obviously the sheath is protected. It's not like a myelin sheath that can lurk where the machinery actually works. It's a protection around the chut, actually.
Around the vertebrae?
No. Around the chut, which is itself surrounded by the vertebrae. And nonetheless, the Gemara views it as being the essential problem. Because basically, in other words, the Gemara holds like this. If there is a problem in the chut hashudra, then what might happen is disastrous. But either the animal will be dead or will be paralyzed. If something would have happened to affect the chut hashidra directly, then the gross impact would have been immediately evident. If it would have affected in a way that it's going to die, it does die. If it's going to affect it in a way that's going to be paralyzed, it won't die. It's just going to be paralyzed. Right? On the other hand, if something affects the protection of the chut hashidra, then you've got trephus, because what happens is that ultimately the entire chut is affected, either through infection or whatever other agency is going to affect it, and it will decay and eventually wipe out the animal. That's trephus. An injury is not trephus, that's a separate issue. So, you know, you might have an injury, might have an animal that's a quadriplegic, fine, but it's not a trephus. Exactly. So therefore, what we're coming to look at over here is something very different than what a doctor is going to look at a trauma patient. Because we're not looking for trauma, we're looking for traumas. And they're very different. So therefore, says the Gemara like this, this is the price like this, Tana Rabbanan, Chuta Shidrashin Nifsak, the Shir is Beruba. So it says Rebbe. Rebbe Yaakov says Afilo Nichev, even has a hole in it. It's already a traitor. Hora Rebbe to Rebbe Yaakov, and Lamaisa, Rebbe, was Mera Halok, Rebbe Yaakov, that feel Nikiv. Whereas Rebbe Huna said, but the truth is, in Halok, Rebbe Yaakov. Now, when you say Rubo, what do you mean? Says Rav, Rubo means Rov Oro. Forget about the contents. If most of the skin around the chut was broken, through to the chut, then you've got a Nifsak. Whereas the other Lashon, Amel Rov Mocho, it's most of the neural matter inside of the chut. So, mind you, I'm a Rov Mocho. Koshkein Rov Oro, again, that doesn't sound like a Koshkein to us. It sounds ridiculous. But, as I've explained, there's a reason for that. The mind you, I'm a Rov Oro, what's the din of Rov Mocho, my assuming that the or is intact? Tashma, the Yomer Niyuli Yomer Revuna, Rubo Sha'amru is Rov Oro. Only. Moak Zer Lo Ma'alev Lo Morit. What happened to the actual nerve bundle in the Chut HaShidra is unimportant to us. Because the effects are obvious. If the animal's alive, then it's alive. That's not going to change. If it's paralyzed, it's paralyzed. That's not going to change. But who cares? What we want to know is whether something has happened to affect the prognosis of this animal. Rav Nesim Barav and Abba Yosef came to Rav. Bodak Barov Oro. So he was sitting in front of Rav. He had a Shaila. He was checking most of the Or. And then he started to check Rav Mocho. Omale and Rav said that it doesn't matter. Im Rav Oro Kayam Barak Zayin Omale Vayin Omari Dom Pah. It's unimportant. Omar Rav Barak Hanam Rav Yeshub and Levi. Nitmarech Pasul. If you've gotten over here something which causes the inside of the contents, as I say, even if you've got a unbroken ore, but something strange is going on inside, either that it's become softened and jelly, or it's become nismasmes. What does that mean? Ezeu hamracha ve'ezeu hamasmasa. What do you mean by those terms? Hamracha means kosher nishpach kititon. Hamracha means it's actually liquefied. Masmesa means it's jellified. Kosher niyacholamod. You hold it up and it just bends. It doesn't have any stiffness to it at all. In either case, it's decaying. And this animal didn't have long to live before you shafted it. It's a trefa.
When we speak of row, are you talking lengthwise?
No.
Around.
Boy, Rabbi Yirmiah, How about Eino Yochol Lamod Bipnei Kovdo, Mari? How about if it's strange in that it's very thick and therefore bends over because of the force of gravity? Is that also a disease? Is that's not normal. You should be able to hold and get some stiffness in it in terms of the relative thickness and weight of the cord table. Don't know about that. Be'rav Amri, Nitmazmez Pasol, Nitmazmez Kasher. If it's Nitmazmez, as we said before, that it's jellified, so then it's Pasol. But if it's Nitmazmez, which means that it's got an area where the tissue has simply disappeared, has been eaten away, and now you have a space in there, you can feel a space inside that isn't filled with moa, that is not liquefied, so it's not continuing to decay, if it's liquefied, you got a problem in there. This is some kind of infection. It's eating away the tissue. It's going to keep moving. So if it's nitmaz meis, it's kosher, because then there's no reason to assume that you have a disease that's going to be destroying the entire spinal cord until the animal dies. Meis, Reb Shimon ben Elazar, Rebbeim, Asher nitmaz meis mocha treifa. He said if it's nitmaz meis, it's treif. Well, that wasn't, that's wrong quote. It actually was Nitmasmeis. Somebody got mixed up with a Zion and a Sama. By the way, Tosis points out, I mean, what the heck are we talking? There's no comparison between the Moach and between the spinal cord. I mean, we've already said that. The Moach, anyway, is a Shir, is the Mashu over here, it's Berulo. He leaves that hanging. He doesn't understand why it is we're comparing these two things, all right? A lot of discussion in the Achronim about it. Any. Is that true, though? Well, Levi, Abba Yosef, Be'basuta. Levi was sitting in a bath, a Roman bath, and Chazal Ugava, the Tyleration, there was a guy he saw, smashed his head, slipped and smashed his head up against something. He says, oh, Nismaz Mezmoche, the Dane, that guy's brain just went. And it was Nismaz Mez. Now, obviously, didn't that mean to say that he's dead? Lav de lo chaye, wasn't he saying it was mizmazmeis that he's going to die? Omer Rabbi Elo, lomar she'eino molid. What he was saying is that he ultimately is going to end up sterile. Because as Rashi points out, you have coming out of the spinal cord, you have obviously the Bein HaProsh, we'll see later on, goes down towards the gidim of the leg into the genital area, and if that's gone, this guy is not going to have very effective machines to do his job. And because of that, he's not going to be able to reproduce. But he wasn't claiming that he was going to die.
Then it doesn't function.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he won't be able to have an erection. Adhechon, oops, I think tomorrow we should worry about Adhechon Chut HaShidra, unless you have lots of time. Tuesday morning to Ragio, we'll get on to the Beit HaPrashot. It's interesting, I had a guy in one time when I taught Chulin, there was a kid in the class whose name was Saint. Dane. And from then on, it was always Nitmazmeis Mocha the Dane. There went Dane's brain. Do you remember that? That was it. Poor guy.
Did he ever have children?
Yes.